Welcome to the Create and Grow podcast. This is Janine Ledford, your host and creator of the groundbreaking concepts of intercultural creativity and prismatic leadership. These concepts focus on the integration of creative thinking and cultural development while preparing your leaders for the future of work. So if you're looking for new, exciting ways to build a positive culture of curiosity, inclusion, and belonging that sparks creativity, this is your place. And it's all based on brain science. We have exciting guests on this show in various fields such as neuroscience, education, the arts, and business who highlight how creative thinking thrives in a culture of diverse collaboration. At the Create and Grow podcast, you'll discover how inclusion drives innovation, especially when you have an arts-infused foundation. Now, enjoy the show. Welcome to the Create and Grow podcast. I'm so excited to be with you today, talking all things intercultural creativity, neurosomatic creativity, prismatic leadership, and with our wonderful, amazing guests, you know, just emotional intelligence and entrepreneurship and all things amazing. Welcome to the show. I have with me an amazing guest, like I said before, Dr. Joseph Pasmani. He is currently the Chief Executive Officer of Innovade Incorporated, a company that's focused on websites, branding, digital marketing, but he has several hats as well. He has worked with Leadership Inspirations, a leadership facilitation company for over 15 years, coaching students and professionals. He also has completed his doctorate in organizational leadership and is currently a professor at Chapman University. I've been there a few times in Southern California. And he's teaching leadership studies and leadership development programs. He's in line with what I always say, that development isn't just during childhood. We are always developing throughout the lifespan. And what does that look like in our human development in our adulthood? So he doesn't use his word too often, expert, because he knows we're always growing. But I consider him an expert in emotional intelligence, creative thinking, resilience building, and he's a part of our team at Cafe Strategies, one of our wonderful facilitators on intercultural creativity, building trust, and prismatic leadership. Thank you for being with us today, Dr. Joe.
It is wonderful to be here. I'm excited for our conversation.
Yes, yes. So I just love bringing thought leaders to the platform because, you know, we are in the new future of work. We are in a place where people need to keep learning in order to stay relevant. They need to stay curious, and we know they need to stay creative. If you can give us just a short synopsis of really what made you get into this work, where did you come from, and how did you come up to be in the place that you're now?
Ooh, long story. I'll try with the short synopsis though. Basically, I think a lot of what I've done is just continue to try to enact the different leadership and the principles we talk about for creativity in my life. And so a lot of that is building the job that I wanted, helping to follow passions that made sense for me, following education that allowed me to continue to enhance the work I was doing professionally and personally. So I think for me, it's been just a lot of actually using what I talk about with students and with professionals for my life and honestly seeing some really good impacts come from that. And then along the way, I've gotten a lot of interest in, like you said, resilience, emotional intelligence, creativity, a number of different leadership development and like facilitation capacities, because I just appreciate helping people grow. I get a lot of fulfillment when I can see other people start to get that light bulb moment and really when teams start to work really well together.
Yes. Yes. Well, you and I have had the chance to teach together, and we really work well together. I'd love to meet people that I vibe with. And you and I did a breakout session at the LashCon. Remember that?
We did. Yeah. A year ago.
When we first figured out there's a whole industry for lashes and that it's a verb. Like,
yeah, lashing. Yeah.
Yeah. Like who lashed you up? Did you get lashed up today? And I'm like, we're like, oh, okay. But, you know, understanding how the mind works, what was that like for you entering a whole new, you know, culture, a whole new field and of people doing this?
I think for me, it just shows that it doesn't really matter what you're doing, what work it is, what industry you're in, like all this stuff matters. How you work with others, how you understand yourself, how you apply some of this stuff. I think all really comes back to how you build that life for yourself. And so I was excited to see that it didn't really matter that we were at LashCon working with lashing experts. We were there with a whole bunch of entrepreneurs who wanted to build their businesses, who wanted to learn about their different practices, different approaches for enhancing their overall way they do business, but also enhancing how they work with others. So for me, I just like being in that environment because it's fun to see kind of what they see. And especially because when we were in there, we got to hear some really interesting situations that I don't think I've ever heard before that are totally specific to the industry. But the nice thing was, is the lessons we were providing, the curriculum that we were going through was still relevant, was still helpful, and they still had really good conversations. So I really enjoyed that brand new atmosphere, but I don't know, what were your thoughts on it?
Yeah, no, it was fun. And that's why, you know, we have our whole training program and certification program of people becoming certified in intercultural creativity, which you went through and gave some wonderful contributions. But it's important for us to look at people who know how to be agile, right? And who know how to metaphorically cross information. So like you said, even though you were dealing with people who are in the lash industry, you can still make those connections across with leadership, business, social development, emotional development, even though they were in a completely different field that you and I have never really been in before. We both have lashes.
I'll be honest, I have not had professional lashing experience. So like, I totally new to me. Like,
no, I mean, we both have like literal lashes.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
You've never gotten them done. I've worn some fake strips every now and then, but I've never gotten them done professionally like that. But you're right, to be in that atmosphere and to hear stories that you and I would not normally have access to, that actually grows our own creative thinking.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. And it's nice to hear, because a lot of these entrepreneurs, I think that a lot of this is an expression of their creativity and their passion. They are starting this business because it's something that excites them or something that they're able to express themselves in. And so it was also nice to see that passion kind of come with it, with a lot of these entrepreneurs there, because they were just so excited about, how do I build my brand? How do I learn? They really wanted to learn and grow. And when you have an audience like that, you are set for success.
Yes, yes. And of course, you know, we always teach with this interactive aspect with the Legos and the pipe cleaner and the road to success. And they have like little cars. And you were also with us. We had a whole team of teachers when we went to the medical center in Boston. And going from people who lash to people who are, you know, having scalpels and doing surgeries and front lines, you know, the nurses, the technicians, people who are in pharmacy. So they were in different departments within the medical center as well. What were your thoughts about like bringing this emotional intelligence and bringing the concept of trust building over there?
Well, it's as complex as all of the organization is and all these different pieces. I think it really boils down to some simple stuff, which is people want to enjoy work they do. People want to enjoy the people they work with and do a good job at whatever they have in front of them. And so I think for us, it was just understanding, how can we help them enhance what they want to do? How can we help them learn a little more so they can be more effective in their roles? How can we help them learn about others so they can work better with others? And how does all that kind of contribute to building a stronger organization that everybody can enjoy? And so it was a slightly different beast. And again, I think working with an entrepreneur versus more of an organization with sets of hierarchies in it, I think that there's different ways to train and different focuses. But I think really the biggest change was just like, it was different focuses. For the entrepreneurs, it was a lot of building and client building and things like that. And I think on the other side, it was really a lot of like team development, trust formation, working collaboratively, and like figuring out how we can play off each other's strengths versus maybe, you know, finding ourselves in conflict because we're miscommunicating or maybe not being clear about what we need.
Yes, yeah, so much there, because your ability to be sensitive to who you're speaking to and to hear, to listen, right? Listen, okay, well, what are their pain points? That's amazing. So let's actually just jump into emotional intelligence. One of the first things that attracted me to your work, I think you and I were both in a meeting with, was it Simon Sinek?
Simon Sinek, yeah. Good old Zoom over COVID. Yes, that was fun.
Yeah, I was like, I can't believe I'm in a meeting with Simon Sinek. It was a Zoom meeting, but it's like, and I even asked him a question about intercultural creativity. So mm-hmm. to hear him say the term that we are trying to send out to the world, that was amazing. But I don't know if you asked him a question as well.
I did. Self-care. Right in line with my emotional intelligence. So it was on brand. Yeah.
Awesome. So after that, we connected and you just really just shared your heart and just about this concept of building emotional intelligence. I have some of your slides from the LashCon presentation that we've done. And you talk about the four dimensions of emotional intelligence. Could you give our audience a roadway around those?
Yes. So I'll talk really high level about all this. Don't show the slides. Way too much stuff.
No.
But essentially, when we think of emotional intelligence, we think of a lot of different things. And I'm sure if you ask yourself that, you probably a couple examples, a couple behaviors come out. But really, it's more of an umbrella. And under that umbrella, like you said, there's four categories. We have self-awareness, which is really kind of understanding ourselves, understanding what we're good at, having confidence in ourselves. Then we have self-management, which is more around how do we react in situations? How do we manage our behaviors? How are we transparent with others? Then we move to social awareness, which is really understanding the group, kind of getting a pulse. How is my group kind of connecting with me? Or maybe what do I need to change? And then lastly, we have relationship management, which is how we interact with others, how we collaborate, work through conflict, inspire others, and a variety of other things. So really, emotional intelligence is a really big umbrella, and there's a lot of different things that fit under it. But having those four quadrants allows kind of a shared set of language. So we can at least talk about where maybe I'm really good, where maybe I could use some additional work. All of this becomes really important because this kind of functions around the concept of emotional contagion. And that is that we are always bleeding our emotions. And I think Amy, one of the other speakers, just did a TED Talk on this a couple months ago. But whether or not we want to, we're leaking our emotions. So if we come into a workplace and we're really excited, people feel that and they feel that energy. And if we come into a workplace and we're kind of down or not really into it, people feel that as well. And I'm sure a number of your viewers could probably think they've walked into a team setting before and the energy really is something they click with and they want to be there and they want to be involved. And I'm sure some of them can also probably sympathize with they walk into a room and it's dead silent and you could just cut the tension with a knife. And both of those are examples of how people's emotions are impacting the environment around them. And so this whole concept is really, if I understand what's happening with me and I understand what kind of emotions I might be, leaking or bleeding out at a given time, I can be that much more effective with my team because I might say, oh, I can bring that energy that's going to enliven my team. Or I might say, I need to be thoughtful of how I'm showing up today because maybe I just have some stuff on my plate. But in either case, it allows us to be more thoughtful with how we step into situations and how we work with others versus when we don't think about that. Well, when we are stepping on eggshell situations, we don't feel comfortable around people because we don't know where they're at or what's potentially going to be an issue for them. And so that's really kind of the core of a lot of it and why I find it important to be something that people bring into their repertoire as they're building their leadership profiles.
So important. Self-awareness, right? There's so many quadrants and probably tons of bullet points underneath the quadrants.
All the bullet points.
Topics that you can tease out and teach on. And, you and I have taught on it a lot. But the beginning, and tell me if you disagree or agree, it's that self-awareness part. I just purchased a book and read it called Leading in a Nonlinear World. And the first half of the book is all about self-awareness, metacognition, interoception, emotional intelligence. It's just like all of the inner skills, right? And so people are hopefully finally getting on this bandwagon of strengthening that. And so that's why I really think our work is so like timely, even though some people have been talking about this for 20 years, right? Like Dr. Daniel Goleman, but people kind of laughed at him 20 years ago. And now they're like, oh, wow, wait, he was on to something.
On
and so
yeah.
what do we do as leaders, leaders in corporations, especially leaders who feel they have to have this certain facade of strongness and almost an ego position in place? How can you coax them to do some more developmental work in this area?
I think when it comes back to it, the biggest asset I can see is somebody's authenticity. When somebody acts authentically, they don't have to put up extra energy or effort to try to maintain this image. They're better at what they do naturally. And so when people can kind of just act the way they need to act, I think they really are their best selves. But to your point, a lot of people kind of come in with a facade. And so I think being able to have conversations and have people realize I'm working with other people. A lot of the time we assume things about others and that leads to us maybe not forming a relationship or creating a little bit of a wall. But I think the more we're able to connect with others and like see the humanity in them, the more I think we're able to work with them and really see like, wow, maybe we just have different styles. Maybe it's not that I don't like this person, they just operate a little differently than me. And so that would be my thought. Again, for a grown professional, are you going to go learn all of this right now? No, but can you implement some of these things by continuing to have conversations with people around you, continuing to kind of embrace who you are? I think those are very manageable steps that can be taken over time and kind of integrated into yourself versus saying, I need to change who I am overnight. Because that's just, you know, that's a lot to ask of anybody at any point.
Well, I don't have my brain with me. I mean, I have my brain, but not my toy brain. And we have to understand how the brain works with this, right? You know, we pull a lot from the neuroscience field and with the work of Dr. Matthew Lieberman over at UCLA and Dr. Daniel Siegel, just looking at how our brains are so social and our brains are so emotional, almost emotional first, then logic. Like it kind of goes through this emotional lens first, then our logic can make sense of it. And it's not overnight, exactly like you just said. And so when we're doing training or when people are kind of waking up saying, how do I really work on this? How do we convince corporate that it can't be like a one and done, like, oh, bring Dr. Joe and Janine in for 2 hours and they'll fix everything in 2 hours. How do we change the conversation saying this has to be a long-term engagement and there has to be feedback time? And so what else is going there so people can really grow well in this area?
So I'd say there's a couple of things to that. One, as adults, learning becomes a two-part process. We have to kind of, if we think of learning as a farm and we, you know, are planning all of this new learning, well, when we're young, it's really easy to plant. We got a lot of room on our farm. But over time, we fill that up with what we know. And so as an adult, it becomes even harder because to learn something, we have to unlearn or change something we know in order to create a path for something new to be learned. So that's one piece to be thoughtful of. The other is, and this goes to a little bit of Sinek's golden circle, is a lot of training right now is done with the rational brain, our neocortex. And so we're focusing on giving a lot of rational details, a lot of data, a lot of information. But studies show that that generally fades in 3 to 6 months, just because there's no use of it. There's no experience with it. We get a lot, but our brain can only remember, retain, and utilize so much. Now, on the other hand, when we learn from a limbic perspective, so we're involved with discussions, experiences, when there's an actual visceral feeling to it, that usually lasts anywhere from 5 to 7 years with regards to the learning memory and retention that we can operate with. And so to your point, when we have a one-off training, that is great, but that's the start. And if there's, doesn't necessarily have to be additional trainings, but there has to be some kind of follow-up, some type of additional work. And that could be done on the, you know, potentially the side of the person or done more formally through the organization. But if there is just a, we're going to give you something, go figure it out, and we're not going to follow up, it's tough to expect somebody to go do a bunch of homework on their own, not really knowing where they're going. But when they have a little bit of a roadmap, when they can see some of that growth and connect some of those pieces, I think it becomes a lot easier for them to be engaged in the learning, for them to retain the learning, and ultimately for the organization to apply it effectively when they're working with others in their roles in a variety of other places.
You have to practice it, right? We practice walking. With those of us who can ride a bike, you just didn't read a book about riding a bike and it just worked, right? Yeah, procedural learning, but also this experiential learning as well. Like, what does that look like to actually get feedback, right? You fall, you get back up. Your brain says, okay, this worked, this didn't work. Let's go do that.
Yeah. Yep.
Yes. And so, because I know as you're a big help with looking at the data analysis within CAFE strategies and really looking at, you know, what are people struggling with now? How are we coming in and doing what we do and engaging with them? And then what really resonated? And then 3 months from now, what is still holding on? Or can we follow up with some newsletters? Can we follow up with some mini videos to remind you about how to implement this and all that good stuff? So what are the aspects of the data part? Like, you're very good with the data. How can you incorporate or support companies with that skill?
So I think data just allows you to quantify, to understand what you're actually doing. And I think that that can be helpful in a few ways. One, we know if development is actually resulting in people changing their thoughts, improving their behaviors, doing things like that. But I think it's also helpful for the organization to kind of see what the focuses are. Where are concerns? Where are challenges? Not necessarily to have to build a whole training around that, but I think the biggest concern that from the last question is when the organization doesn't support that ongoing change, it's that much harder to engage in. And so if the organization has that data and can see, oh, we need to be focusing on this thing, or we need to improve here, they can actually be structuring some of that future learning around that. But when they don't know that, they kind of just have a one and done training and maybe a follow-up survey, and they leave it to the employees, when really that data could help inform a progression of growth of learning and development for their employees, not with a ton of extra sessions, but just by knowing maybe what a cadence of things they want to learn or what would be helpful to learn within their viewpoint.
I love that learning and development, like that ING part, right? It's learning. It's not like learned and developed, period.
Ongoing, always ongoing, right?
Learning and developing. There's this continual. Yes, I love that. I'm going to write that down, because that might be a blog or something. Wonderful, wonderful. And so with your own company, because I know you work full time as a professor, you also are running your own business as far as branding and design, and then you're facilitating with us as we grow our clientele and teaching. What's really like getting you up in the morning? What are you excited about?
So honestly, for me, all of it. I know it's not a cop-out answer, I promise. The reason I say all, because each one of these things allows me a different strand to connect with people on, a different way to focus a different set of skills, a different way to help people. As a professor, I can come in, I can help students kind of reach that potential, learn about these concepts. As a CEO, I can help my clients ultimately build their businesses, increase their income, you know, do a number of things that allows them to grow. As a facilitator, I can work in a variety of educational capacities with high school students and middle school students and professionals, helping them not only learn how to understand these skills, but implement them in a group. And then with CAFE, we're able to take it to people who really ultimately can make decisions and change for others. And so I think each one of those avenues for me has its own reward in a sense, because I get to work with something a little different and I love the variation. It requires me to constantly have to grow and to change and to evolve with that group that I'm working with or that situation that I'm in. And candidly, I just appreciate working with good people, and I get to work with some really good people across the board, both on the actual facilitator and the administrative side, but also on the client and the customer and the audience side, just some really good people.
Yeah. And so what really drives you to continue to create? Because I know we were even talking about looking at some of your courses, or even creating some new courses mm-hmm. for CAFE. Like, if you can create any type of experience for leadership, so let's say senior leadership in corporate, like what would you, in like out of the box, you could be in the woods somewhere, like what would that look like and why?
You know, I'm gonna go in a totally different direction than you think. If I was to do some type of a senior corporate thing, I would do something that's 15 minutes a week, and I would do something around like balancing everything they do with stuff outside of that, because I think that people have a lot of that, here's more work to do. I think what people need to work on is, how do I balance all the work that I have with the life that I have a lot of the time? And so with emotional intelligence, and I always use this metaphor, it's like being on a plane. If all of a sudden the masks drop, well, they tell you put on your mask first and then put on the mask of the person next to you, or you know, your child or whatever, because ultimately like you need to be breathing to help that person next to you. And self-care is kind of the same way. If you're not in a good place, it impacts everything else. That emotional contagion we talked about, it's that much harder to have to get up and do things. We burn out faster. We just don't have that energy, and ultimately, the more we're able to take care of ourselves, I think that enhances everything else we do. And at least from my experience, the people running organizations, the biggest thing I think they need help with is not organizational competency, is not necessarily like how to work with a team. It's how do you balance what you're doing so you can come into work and be that much more effective? Because people don't always make that connection that what you're doing outside of work does come back to impact what you're doing inside of work.
In the words of Leonardo da Vinci, it's all connected, right? It's all connected. And that's why I love the brain, because it shows everything's connected. Your sleep patterns, your social awareness and connectivity, your creativity, like whether you feel like you're able to create, is connected to your well-being and the way that you perform in different areas. So it is all connected. Mm-hmm. One of the cool things that I love about our work is the fact that we really get to use manipulatives, right? We have, all our manipulatives are there for a reason, like the diamond pen, the car, the canvas that they paint on or color on. Which one really stood out to you when you were doing your training and why? I know these are just
I know it's the Legos are great and the Play-Doh's wonderful. Like my creative mind just went to the tens, but I actually think the journal and some of the reflection and check-ins was the most, like across the board, the most useful, because it allowed me to then look back and think about like, what have we gone over? How does this relate to where we're going next? And so I think the activities helped to punctuate a lot of that and give me the reflections. But I think the journal was this one kind of piece that for me tied it all together really nicely, because I could come back and say like, oh, over this course, I've been able to go from this base level of knowledge at page one to 20 pages later, like a really good understanding of the seven gems and intercultural creativity and how do we apply it effectively and how do we utilize not just our own opinions and experience, but how really bring in good research and back it up in a way where it's science-based and data-backed, so people know that it's not just good opinion, it's good opinion with real science and real research behind it as well.
And what is one of your favorite gems that really resonated with you?
Okay, I love perspective shifting. It's just, it's okay. For me, it's basically empathy. It's just like, how do you step into somebody else's shoes? And so I really do. I think that is one of the more useful elements, especially in like a workplace, is we all have the stories we create in our head. And with those stories, there's always a villain. And so how can you step out of that story, step into somebody else's shoes, and maybe change your overall narrative? And I think that's really helpful, especially when a lot of conflicts at work just come from miscommunications, or like I said earlier, stylistic differences. I just do things one way and you might do things another way, but really it's not better or worse. It's just, we do things different ways. So that would be my thought.
Awesome. 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 Well, I love just speaking with you, working with you, and seeing how you just relate these really difficult concepts for some. I just say, tell people, like, it's really simple, yet it could be very varied, right? Just especially when you're dealing with emotions, feelings, the biofeedback, because mm-hmm. they always say, you know, it's also connected to your body. I just spoke with Dr. Robin, and she is almost a somatic doctor, right? She gets people back into their bodies. You might meet her one day, because she might support us in the neurosomatic creativity part. And it'll be cool to have another doctor on board, medical doctor, but because we want to get people back into their bodies as well, and not mm-hmm. just in their brains, but really understand the connectiveness of that. Do you have any experience with that of helping people with the self-awareness journey of connecting to their inner and outer vessels?
Yes. So a very complicated set of slides, but boiled down basically with Daniel Goleman, there were two other authors, Richard Boyatzis and Annie McKee, and they wrote a wonderful book called Resonant Leadership. They also wrote one with Goleman called Primal Leadership. But in that book, it talks about something called the renewal cycle and the sacrifice cycle. And essentially, these are two cycles that we just go through as human beings, as leaders. Life, a lot of things happen, a lot of things get thrown our way. And so sometimes when we go into that sacrifice cycle, that's when our stress picks up, our sympathetic nervous system kicks into play. We go into a fight or a flight kind of mode. It really does send our whole body into a very focused survival mode. So kind of our vision narrows in a sense, like our blood goes from our mind to our bodies, because we're either going to, again, fight or we're going to run. And really that leads to decreased productivity, decreased creative thinking, more anxiety because you perceive more threats around you, lower functioning immune system, higher corticosteroids, which also burn out your neurons in your brain. So really when you're in this like stress cycle, you feel it, and all that stress usually leads to more stress. And so that's why when we are not feeling good, we tend to get sick. Or when we're really stressed, we get sick more often than when we're feeling good, because all of those pieces that start up here impact our body. Now, on the other side, the renewal side, it's all about how do we use the parasympathetic nervous system. So that's what we sleep with. And so when we kind of slip into that using mindfulness, hope, or compassion, mindfulness is being present, hope is being excited about the future, and compassion is care and empathy in action. When we use those, it arouses a different set of systems. We renew our immune system. We have some oxytocin and vasopressin that gets pushed in. We increase our immune system, lower our blood pressure. And so a lot of these pieces that we see all start in the mind. If we perceive something as stressful, our body will react to it accordingly. At the same point, if we perceive something as renewing and something that is giving us energy back, our body will also follow that. And so that's one of, outside of the four quadrants we talked about, that's one of the big concepts, because it is a direct mind to body connection. And we have all felt those really stressful times where it just feels like we're in this hole of stress. We can't get out. you might not be feeling well. And we've all felt those times where we're at the top of life. Life feels really good. And if we can manage those, we can be really effective with just how we approach everything.
Yeah, so good, so good. And that's why our work almost needs to make sure we're connected to the body. That's why I thought, you know, neurosomatic creativity was such an integral part of the umbrella at Cafe Strategies and the work that we do as well. So I'm glad. I haven't heard about that since you and I spoke last year. You did bring that up. And I remember like, this is some good stuff. I have to remember this. And then life happened and we were building over there. But really getting, you know, getting the tools. And, you know, my background is in K-5 elementary ed. Mm-hmm. And it's like, these tools need to be given. You know, I teach my five-year-old these. He had an issue this morning about where he had to really regulate his breath and calm down. And it was cool to see him, you know, and calm himself. I was like, I know adult men who don't know how to do that.
No, I'm teaching to college students. And I'm like, I'm glad you know this now. Like, this would have been so helpful. And even when I teach it to professionals that are 50 and 60, like, I wish I would have known this like 30, 40 years ago. This would have been really helpful knowledge as I'm building my career, as I was trying to manage these challenges that life threw at me. And so the earlier, the better. I actually have a younger niece and nephews, and I gave them, I think it's one of like the flip faces. You can do like a happy face or a sad face. But again, like if you're able to share how you feel with others, that allows others to respond to you in a different way. And I don't think there's a good or a bad age for that. It's just the more you practice it, the better you get at it.
It's just so important to have these skills. So that's why I'm just so happy that you and the other facilitators are on board on just, beating the path, right, of getting to people, especially people, all people, but people in leadership positions who have control over teams, and because social contagion is a real thing. And we want to make sure we are keeping people in an emotional state of creativity and curiosity and hope, as opposed to anxiousness and fear. And, you know, people just don't want to go do the extra mile because they're fearful of boss or something. And I've heard story after story. So we have a lot of work to do.
So much work. But here's the thing. End of the day, it's a good investment for a company. Like this allows you a better bottom line, higher profit, happier people, like all of these things. It's not like it's an expenditure and you never see anything come back. Like you see the results immediately on a lot of levels. So I think that while the work we have ahead of us, there is a lot of it and a lot of folks can be impacted by it. I'm excited because I know that we can continue to improve both individuals, teams, but also organizations in the process.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, thank you so much for giving us your time. I know you have 15 hats on. Have a lot to do, but I'm so thankful for your wisdom and your expertise, even though you're always on your learning journey as well. And if we are known as the diamonds, right? And that's our metaphor. What is one diamond, one gem you would like to leave with the audience?
Take a couple of minutes for yourself every once in a while. Nothing that crazy. Like literally once a week, just take like a few minutes, maybe breathe, maybe listen to some music, maybe go outside, but like just balance everything you're doing in your life with a little bit of time for you. Cause I'm sure you're putting a lot of time into other people and other things. And too often we just don't think about ourselves in that process.
And you can insert it at the most interesting places. Like before my son and I get into the car, we call it our default mode network time for the brain. And we like just walk outside. And we just don't talk and we just look at, because in front of our house, we don't have houses blocking us. There's just like an open field and like a park. We just see birds flying and then we see the mountains and we just stand there for a good minute or two. And then we get in the car and start our day. But yeah, it really makes a difference.
Absolutely. And again, a couple minutes, nothing crazy. Don't spend hours, 3 minutes.
You can spend hours if you have
it, go for it. But all I'm asking, a couple minutes, just take for yourselves. I promise it'll be worth it.
Awesome. Awesome. So if people wanted to find you and your website company or find more about some of the work you do, where can they go?
They can find my website company, innovate.tech, and they can find me over on LinkedIn, Joe Pozzoni.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, thank you so much. Thank you to my amazing audience and tribe, the Create and Grow tribe, for tuning in once again to just get your highlight of information on how to be a great prismatic leader. A prismatic leader is a leader who positions themselves to have those wonderful abilities of seeing the hidden colors and gifts of themselves, but also bring out the hidden colors and gifts and abilities of those who you are serving and leading. So thank you so much, and we will see you next time. Bye-bye. Thank you so much for joining us at the Create and Grow podcast. We hope that you obtain some amazing gems and are able to learn the various ways you are creative and how we can be more creative when we work together. If you wish to learn more about our organizational training programs and professional development for companies, organizations, schools, and districts, visit cafestrategies.com. That's C-A-F-F-E strategies.com. This is where we have amazing keynote speakers and certified facilitators on board to help your organization learn how to develop leaders with the unique prismatic leadership method. We also have groundbreaking book titles in our online bookstore that lay out the 7 gems of intercultural creativity, as well as our inner child books that inspire the innate creative ability of our little ones and you too. Our team thanks you once again for joining us on the Create and Grow podcast. And remember to shine bright like a diamond. See you next time.